Well, with Thanksgiving a day away, many of you may be planning for a trip out of town to celebrate the holiday, or maybe you're staying in town and visiting with family and friends. As part of that, you'll have to figure out how you're going to get there. Should I take the GW Bridge or the Lincoln Tunnel? Maybe it's better to take the train. What's the quickest way to get from the east side to the west side? Well, as you do this, whether you're aware of it or not, you're using a mental map of the city to figure out your route. There's a new book called Nonstop Metropolis, a New York City Atlas, which takes a more fanciful look at New York City's geography. It has a map of the songs of New York and a comparison between city planner Robert Moses's vision of the city and architect Frederick Law Olmsted. WNYC's Ilya Maritz, he's our newsroom self-proclaimed map enthusiast. I didn't know that. He spoke with the book's authors, Rebecca Solnit and Joshua Jelly Shapiro.
So I first became aware of this book on Twitter. This was a couple weeks ago, and people were tweeting little grabs from the map on page 86, which is entitled City of Women. Can you explain that map?
With pleasure. So there's a couple things I wanted to do. One is I wanted to look at the gender politics of the city. Almost everything in the city that's named after a human being is named after a man. There's just no women bridges. There's not a lot of streets, statues, buildings. The Whitney's about the only female museum, although you have the Frick and the Guggenheim and all these dude museums. But I also wanted to find a way to put all those names out there and really connect them and make it kind of exciting. And it's been so fun looking at the response where people are like, hey, I could get on at Ruth Bader Ginsburg and get off at Venus Williams.
Right. I should say, like, where you'd expect Union Square, it says Eleanor Roosevelt. Where you'd expect Castle Hill Avenue in the Bronx, it's Jennifer Lopez, Jenny from the Block.
But, you know, one of the other key ideas behind this map, just the incredible power of maps to shape our image of where we live. And, of course, the subway is the map of the city that people know best. So it felt very interesting just to tweak it and say, how does it help you see New York in a different way if we just tweak the labels in this particular way?
You guys also do these really interesting juxtapositions. So there's one map that's everything Frederick Law Olmsted did in New York versus everything that Robert Moses did in New York. And you realize both of these guys had a really big influence. There's another one that's brownstones and basketball in Brooklyn. And what were you trying to do with these juxtapositions?
The really practical answer is if you put two things on the map, you get twice as much done in the same amount of real estate. But more deeply than that, I really think of cities as these beautiful places of coexistence, cross-pollination. But the pairings really became this kind of wonderful set of city dialogues, whether it's things that are kind of hostile to each other, or things that complement each other, things that are alike or different.
In a sense, it's sort of about whimsy and it's about poetry and, okay, we can put together these things in interesting ways. But often when you put them together, some new kind of meaning emerges. So, for example, brownstones and basketball, that was a sort of, okay, what's iconic of Brooklyn? And we thought, okay, brownstones are sort of thought of as the iconic housing stock of this borough. Now they're also symbolic of gentrification and other things. Basketball being the kind of city game, and there's a lot of famous, you know, basketball players from Brooklyn. But when you put them together, you have sort of interesting things. You say, oh, the block where Spike Lee made Do the Right Thing and that brownstone he was living in is near the court where, say, Chris Mullen grew up playing basketball. It just creates an interesting conversation and a way to sort of see the borough anew.
In the old days, you used to have to, like, rebuy maps every few years because things would change, especially, like, if you drive. You know, you might buy a new auto atlas every 10 years or something like that. So I wonder what it means for you guys to actually put this out here. I'm going to pick it up in, like, book form where, you know, actually, the moment it appears in stores, it's already on the road to obsolescence.
Well, we're mapping some stuff that happened 400 years ago. So, like, if it's 401 years ago, it's just as relevant. The beauty's really important, too. You know, they're really inspired by the old atlases that were major works of art and were really much richer even than the kind of gas station maps people were using 15 years ago.
Yeah, and I think that not only can it sort of tell you a story about a place or shape your perception of it, right, but it invites you really to experience it or, you know, travel the world while you're looking at an atlas, right? Or also to give you a sense of context, to place yourself in a story about a place, whether it's New York City or San Francisco or New Orleans or, you know, a map of Tibet that you can kind of lose yourself in.
Joshua Jelly Shapiro is a geographer and writer and a visiting scholar at NYU's Institute for Public Knowledge. Rebecca Solnit is a prolific writer and essayist. Thank you both very much for joining us.
Joy to being another map lover. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And the book is called Nonstop Metropolis, a New York City Atlas, and we've been hearing from WNYC's Ilya Maritz.